scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, let's get this hour going. It is Tuesday, April 23rd with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, coming at you from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio on this Tuesday. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, Mr. Vickers. Happy Tuesday, buddy.
Hello, Mr. Steinberg. How are we? I didn't realize we were being so formal today.
Always, always ready to be formal. Want to kick off this hour by talking a little Nazem Kadri. First of all, congratulations. New book coming out.
Yes.
That's very neat that Nazem's written a book, and it'll be coming out very, very shortly.
Now, will you look through the index to see where you're referenced?
I don't think I'm going to make that.
Okay, just checking.
I don't think I'm going to make that. Maybe on the first draft, but I don't think I'm making the final draft. No, I'm looking forward to reading that and more details on Nazem's first ever book to come. But it kind of was the catalyst. I saw that news on Tuesday. It was like, well, one of the things we were going to be talking about at some point coming out of Locker Cleanout Day was indeed the season that Nazem Kadri had and what is to come. Because there's no question that Kadri was one of the overwhelming positives of the season for the Flames. It was one of the feel-good stories. It was one of the constant positives. When things were going well for the team, he was a big reason why. When things weren't going so well, he was a big reason or a big catalyst in trying to change that. He was probably the team's most consistent player from start to finish. And, you know, I thought his comments from Locker Cleanout Day on Friday were also one of the biggest positives of the offseason so far, because him cementing his commitment to sticking around and being a part of the Flames as they undertake something new, that was a really important thing to hear on Friday. Because based on what we saw from him all season long and based on the guy that he was throughout the year, in my opinion, that's a guy you want to have around. That's a guy you want to be one of their or have being one of the central figures of a retool or a reshape or a rebuild as this team tries to get back to contending. I think what we saw from Kadri this season is what you want to have as a part of it going forward. And, you know, hearing from him was one of the top things on my list going into Friday. I think Markstrom was the very top, but Kadri was in that second group of things. Okay, I'm really curious as to what we hear from Nazem. I'm really curious as to what his tact is in terms of how he addresses the future. And I wouldn't have been surprised and I wouldn't have blamed him if he kind of hedged or was a little noncommittal, but he went the complete different way, right? And I thought that was a really important thing to hear from one of the most important guys on the team.
Yeah, so I'm like you, and I'm going to just put Markstrom aside because I was really wondering mostly about the reaction that Nazem Kadri would have, that Blake Coleman would have, that Mackenzie Weegar would have, because this isn't an ideal situation for that trio. And two of those guys are Stanley Cup winners. And in Nazem Kadri's case in particular, you've got a guy that signed a 7-year deal on the assumption or on the thought that this team was in it to win it for the duration of that 7-year contract. Fresh off of Stanley Cup, we know how competitive he is. We know how fiery he is. I think we can both agree that he was their best skater from October X to April X of the season. First in points, 75. Third in goals, 29. Two off the team lead. And I was very interested to hear what he had, because one, he can be very candid. And to be perfectly honest, he didn't sign up for a team that was going to go through a rebuild or a retool or whatever the next stage of the Calgary Flames step to competitiveness is. So he was one of the ones that, and he did speak pretty candidly, but I, like you, wouldn't have faulted him if he took that talk, that availability in a different direction from which he did. So it's kind of a great feather in the cap for the organization that he went the route that he did, and we'll hear from him in a moment, but he went the route that he did to reaffirm that, no, I am a member of the Calgary Flames. That's how I want it. That's what I chose to do.
Yeah.
So let's be part of the solution here and get this on the rails.
So, and again, had it gone the other way, I honestly would not have been critical of him. Or he turns 34 in October. So we know that age-wise, he's getting towards or closer to the end than the beginning, especially with how long he's been in the league for. He's a highly competitive guy. He's still less than 2 years removed from raising a Stanley Cup with the Colorado Avalanche. And so I really did wonder if, you know, and he knew what was coming. Every player
right.
knew what was coming, especially veterans. I think all had an idea there was going to be some type of question about their commitment level to the future going forward. And so I was wondering if he'd hedge. I was wondering if he would be, and he's so polished. He's so good.
I grew up in the Toronto media market.
He grew up, he was the only, or he was the big game in town in London. He was the big game in town in Toronto.
Seventh overall pick in 2009 to Toronto. That's a cooker.
High profile player in the highest profile market. The guy is so polished. So I was wondering if he was going to have a very polished approach to hedging or being non-committal. But instead, he went the other direction.
And as polished as he is, it didn't feel like he was giving a speech or talking off of cue cards or rehearsed. Yeah. Rehearsed is definitely the word or the phrase I was looking for. So thank you for pulling that out. It was very, to me, candid in what he thought, where he thought the organization was, and how he could help the team get back to a place where he wants to be.
This was Nazem Kadri on his future with the Flames Friday at Locker Cleanout Day.
Are you fully committed to sticking around here through this retool?
For sure. I mean, I chose to be here. There was other options for me. I chose to be in Calgary, and, I still feel that way, of course. Obviously, like I mentioned, it was a frustrating season, a disappointing one. But, hopefully over the summertime, we can look to upgrade certain positions and, have another crack at it next summer.
Just to kind of double back on talking about choosing to be here, you would embrace kind of being a leader and kind of leading the way with a younger team here going forward?
Yes, I would. I think I've done that this year. And, who would have thought? I guess I'm pretty good at it. So, I enjoy the young guys and the youth being around and, the energy they bring to the rink. So that's something that I look forward to coming to the rink every single day. So, the kids we got on this roster are, they're great people. They're great kids and they're pretty good players too. So, obviously, I think any winning team has kind of a small injection of, the youth and the younger kids kind of coming up and challenging, older players for spots or really taking advantage of those kind of opportunities. Like I said, I want to be competitive and, I think, management and our organization's on the same page as that.
So, there's no reading between the lines, there's nothing really you come away from hearing those two answers to a couple of questions and feeling like, oh, where exactly does Nazem stand here? Like, exactly where he stands. And that's why, so Eric asked the initial question, I think it was question two of his about 8-minute availability with us. And then a few other questions were asked in there that were not as pertinent to our discussion. So I took those questions out. And then my question in there going back to Eric's was, hey, just to reiterate, like is being a leader and being a driving force on a retooling team, something that you'd embrace? And he goes out of his way to say, yeah, absolutely. And I really do wonder how much being put in that role this season lit a new fire under Nazem, because he's never really been in that situation before. In Toronto, he was a younger guy, and as the Maple Leafs went through their building process and Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and the John Tavares signing and all that type of stuff, as those things happened, Nazem, who was part of kind of a different regime in Toronto, Kadri was still a part of it, but they were going in a different direction, so was never really, and was still a younger player in his 20s, and so wasn't in a leadership role. He goes to Colorado, and he joins a very established group of leaders led by Nathan MacKinnon with Eric Johnson and Mikko Rantanen and all. And so he joined a room. Gabriel Landeskog. Yeah, he joined a room that already had an established leadership group. Comes to Calgary in a very bizarre, transitional, turmoil-filled summer. And, you know, you got Daryl Sutter, who's this massive personality, and a group that's trying to figure out what the hell they are.
No captain.
No captain. And then this year, I think there was all kinds of new leadership responsibility put on Kadri for the first time in his career. You know, with all of the young players that he was put with, Matt Coronato was with them early on. Then obviously we know about Zarian Pospisil. Really embraced that and really took on that challenge. And then in late January, when Elias Lindholm gets dealt, becomes, hey, you're the number one center on this team. And I think you really embraced that as well. I was really impressed to hear those things from Nazem on Friday. And I really do wonder what this season did for him in terms of kind of building that belief and lighting a new fire.
It's kind of interesting to go back to Monday's show and compare slash contrast Markstrom's comments versus Kadri's, where Markstrom's was ambiguous at best, vague, non-committal. And then you have Nazem Kadri, who straight out declares, no, I'm here. I had other options 2 years ago to sign. I chose Calgary. I still choose Calgary. Calgary's where I want to be. I can help. Management and I are on the same page in terms of getting things more competitive, so on and so forth. And to me, Nazem Kadri is one of the top two, maybe top three most important players on the roster right now. Because one, again, on the ice, in terms of skaters, and we can debate at another time whether Markstrom was a team MVP over the course of the 82-game schedule or if it was Nazem Kadri, but he was your most important skater on the ice. And even when things didn't go well through the first 9 or 10 games when he had just one assist, and it seemed like from the outside the world was crumbling in, and Nazem Kadri was just like, no, I'm getting my chances. Look at the metrics here. Like, if I play the same way, I'm going to, you know, get back to producing the way I produce. Lo and behold, he did. So he presented that sort of attitude on the ice in terms of his game never wavering from 1 to 82. But then you have the Stanley Cup experience that the team can certainly lean on. And you know that there are guys in that locker room that are just going to gravitate to the Kadris, to the Colemans, especially when this thing gets to a point where the Flames are back in the playoffs again and you have that expertise and that leadership to lead on. But also, and I'm not privy to being in the Flames room outside of the 10 to 15 minutes we're granted for media availabilities and all that, but everything that we've heard throughout the season, everything I'm inclined to believe, that yeah, he is a voice in that room and a very important one. So he's bringing it on the ice, he's bringing it off the ice, and when things get more competitive, he also has that Stanley Cup ring he can dust off and show the boys every once in a while.
Well, and that also, like, I even remember talking to Mackenzie Weegar on our post-game show after Game 82 and just asking him about, you know, he hit his milestone and you know.
Sorry, eight shots for Kadri and, like, 16 attempts.
I think he had 7 high dangers or something. Like, no, it was, he had 8 shots, 9 scoring chances, 3 high dangers, I think, was what it ended up being.
And it was something like 16 attempts. Yeah. anyways,
he
digress.
Did everything in his power.
Except
the hockey gods just really, you know, sometimes the hockey gods control more than we'd like. And for whatever reason, that night, the hockey gods had decided that he was not getting 30. Because he did it. There had to be something supernatural who decided this is not the year you're getting 30, because he did everything in his power to get to 30 goals.
I'm guessing it bugged him for maybe 12 hours, and then it's like, oh, well.
Well, and again, so what Weegar said was, I was like, yeah, how choked are you that after all that, Nazem didn't get it? He's like, yeah, Naz will be okay, though. He's got that one thing none of us have, or most of us don't have. He's got a ring and those types of things. I really think hearing those words and hearing Uyghur's another guy that has said very similar things. I'm here. I'm part of this. I want to be a part of the solution.
Easy to want out. That's the easy route.
Exactly. And having guys like that say things like that, like having veterans and guys who are signed long-term, who are big parts of this team, say those things and double down on them publicly, I think that makes an impact. I think it makes an impact on fans, but I think, and not to say fans aren't important, but I think more importantly, it makes an impact inside that room. I think it makes an impact on a Dustin Wolf or a Connor Zeri or a Rasmus Anderson, or I think it just, it makes a real impact on guys inside that room who maybe aren't exactly sure where this thing is going.
Well, if you're a young player, and then you can mention Zeri, Pospisil, Wolf, so on and so forth, if one of your best players or your best skater is, I don't want to say waving the white flag and trying to get the heck out of here, that's probably not going to sit well with me in terms of that player particularly, but it's also going to make me sour on the situation around me somewhat, where if you had this guy that you respect and was so key and valuable to you and your development all season long, just want to leave, I imagine it would make me look around and go, if he wants to leave, why should I want to be here too? And obviously different circumstances, although both under contract, but it would give me as a young player a sense of pause in terms of, well, we've seen all these other guys leave, and now the guys that are here and under contract want to go too. Like, that would be a massive red flag for me. The other place where I think it's important, and we did hear Nazem Kadri touch on this a little bit about other players asking him about Calgary. The fact that you've got the likes of Kadri, Uyghur, Coleman reaffirming their commitment to the Calgary Flames, and you have other, whether they're pending unrestricted free agents or just guys around the league going, hey, what's going on with Calgary? You've got a guy that's a built-in PR rep for you saying, no, man, Calgary's awesome. I'm definitely staying here. I love my life here. I love what we're going to be doing on the ice. Off the ice, it's a fantastic place for me and my family. That commitment goes beyond just the player. It goes beyond just the team. It radiates through the rest of the NHLPA in my mind.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I do believe the Flames are committed to getting younger here. And I do believe they're committed to building something for further than just next season.
Right.
And I think having guys like Kadri and Uyghur and Coleman and guys like that, obviously Backlund, like guys who are established NHL vets who do things the right way and are guys that you're like, yeah, that's how you want to model yourself. Like, having those guys as a group gets younger to kind of look, I know people get sick of us say set the culture and set, but I don't think that's irrelevant.
No,
I think that having guys around for situations like that, I think it's important, and I think they're big pieces to have going forward. And honestly, you know, I know that with Chris Tanev leaving and Elias Lindholm leaving, that's two alternate captains that left. I mean, I think, and I know that there were some rotating letters that got put on guys in different spots throughout the end of the season and down the final couple months. But with how he worked with the younger players this year, how do you not give Nazem Kadri a letter next year with this team and Uyghur and Coleman? You might have to rotate through some A's throughout the year, because I think that's an important thing too, to establish even more what the guy means here.
I mean, I don't have the running list of who's here and who's not here anymore with the letters for the Calgary Flames, but Nazem Kadri would be one that I would probably be more inclined to stitch an A on. Same with Mackenzie Uyghur, Blake Coleman. I mean, you run through the list and you've got some very valuable vets here, but Nazem Kadri for me has done it again on the ice. He's done it with the kids. He's elevated vets. He's been a key voice in that room, and just his sheer presence, I think it's very important. And I would not at all be against a situation where he wears a letter full time next year.
So what can we expect from him next season? He's coming off the second best statistical career of his year and of his career. And probably I don't think it's crazy to say, just overall, that might be the second best season he's ever had, if not the best season he's ever had. Not in a situation like Colorado, where you've got the Rantanens and Makars and McKinnons. McKinnon. Obviously, he got elevated while McKinnon was hurt that year when they won the Stanley Cup. Was a massive part of it, but it's a little like that team still didn't struggle to score in 21-22, right? Whereas this team struggled to score this year. And I think 75 points is a pretty big accomplishment for a team that was as offensively challenged as the Flames were.
Well, and again, he only had one in his first 9 or 10, too.
That's right.
He's at 74 over 72 of the last 72 games.
He was essentially a point-per-game player for the final 73 games of the season. And I think that's a really impressive feat, knowing, as I said, it was a team that did not do a lot of scoring this year. And as the year went along, offense, it was at times a little bit of an issue for him. So his two best statistical seasons of his career were at the ages of 31 and 33. He turns 34 in early October. Knowing that and knowing what we saw from him this year and all that type of stuff, I don't know. I think it's safe to assume, or it would lead you to believe, that he's got a few more pretty productive seasons left in him on this team.
For me, I look at his first two seasons, and last year he had 56 points in 82 games, still scored 24 goals. And then, of course, the 75-point season with the 29-goal result this year. Somewhere in the middle is where my expectation is going to lie. I know this isn't a true career year, and he had 87, technically three seasons ago, his last season with the Colorado Avalanche in 2022. But I don't see why he can't either A, flirt with a point per game, or B, be north of 25 goals again. Like, there's nothing in his game that I saw this year that went, oh, you know what? He's managing to get a little puck luck and he's sticking it out. But I don't think the way that Nazem Kadri is playing right now is sustainable when he's 34 or 35. Like, I don't see a drop off coming anytime soon for him with his play style, his competitiveness. I'm sure that'll translate into the, you know, prepping for next season as well. He's a guy that said, yeah, we're going to be more competitive. Well, that starts with the individual players and how you get yourself ready for next season, the offseason. He doesn't strike me as a guy that's going to take too many days off.
Well, and it's not like he goes about his business. Like, it's not like the way or the reasons he was successful this year were things that really fall off hard.
Well, and there's not even one defining trait in his game.
He's not a blazer.
It's not like his skating is going to fall off a cliff and be like, oh, he's completely ineffective.
Right? Because, like, he's a good skater, but not an incredibly, like, he's not.
He has plus attributes across the board, but even if you subtract one, he's still got the other four if you want to do the five tool thing.
Skill level's high. Like, he's got a really underrated level of skill. His offensive vision is good. He's strong. He's got a good shot. He's just a really good blend. He's a well-rounded guy, and those are a lot of times the type of players that don't fall off cliffs and don't go rapidly into decline. So I think there's plenty to suggest that he's got a number of good years left in him. So, and then that leads kind of to the last part of our Nazem Kadri conversation on this Tuesday. Is Andre Kuzmenko a guy that you see as a long-term fit on his right side? Or by long-term, I mean a next season fit on his right side? Like, is that something that you think would benefit all parties for a good chunk of next season?
I mean, can I put an asterisk on this question? Because sure. I would go right back to that duo starting next October for sure. But as much as we've just sort of, for lack of a better term, pump the tires on the competitiveness of Nazem Kadri, and yeah, I expect him to have a really strong summer and all that, I need to know what Andre Kuzmenko is showing up in the fall, because I think at this stage, it's going to be, that is the most coveted wing spot on the Flames going into next season as it stands right now for me, being Nazem Kadri's winger and being his right winger, because you're talking about your best center, maybe your most complete player, obviously your MVP debatably your MVP from this past season. So I don't think you just go out and gift that automatically. But if Andre Kuzmenko shows up in September in great shape, and by all accounts, you see the things that you saw over the final 11 games of the regular season this year, absolutely I'm going right back to that, because I don't know necessarily how you'd go away from that if the formula is exactly the same for Kuzmenko. I mean, he led the Flames with 9 goals and 17 points in 11 games. That's not, again, you can't do this and it's not sustainable this way, but that's 128 point pace over an 82 game schedule is what Kuzmenko was performing at over the course of the final 11 games. So yeah, I would definitely be looking at reuniting that duo, but for me, it's on Kuzmenko to earn the retention on that spot more so than just gifting it to him.
I agree. Like, I think you want to go into next season with that as kind of your ideal. But I think you also want to go into next training camp with, okay, Kuzmenko's still got to prove that that's where he belongs.
Right.
It was great. And Kuzmenko's production started immediately when he got put. It was the St. Louis game. It was that ridiculous strip of Justin Falk and then upstairs on Binnington.
Oh, yeah.
That it was that game that started the Kuzmenko run. With the numbers that you just threw out there, started that night in St. Louis, and that was, and there's no coincidence that it corresponded with him being put on the, you know, the best skaters line, and, you know, kind of putting him on a line with a duo that's worked really well together, right, of Kadri and Pospisil, which is interesting that that's the one that turned into the duo. You know, had you asked me, like, in January when Kadri was between Zeri and Pospisil, said, what's the duo on that line? Because we talk more about forward duos than we do about trios, forward trios these days. I would have gone then. I would have said, oh, probably Kadri Zeri. Instead, it turned out to be Kadri Pospisil. And you know, the more you think about it, the more you can understand. And that's why, you know, the pace that that Pospisil plays with, and the physicality and the edge, they fit really well together. And then you throw a guy like Kuzmenko, who doesn't like to hold the puck, but likes to release the puck. And Kadri's a guy who loves to hold it. Pospisil's a guy that really works on the forecheck. It opens up
first
space.
First man in, yep.
The three of those guys together, like, again, it worked for 15 games or whatever it was. And I also think it's got the opportunity to work long-term, because Kadri loves to hold the puck. He loves to be the primary puck carrier. Dish off to Kuzmenko, who's either going to fire it or get it right back to Kadri creatively, and in a better spot for Kadri to fire it. And then with the space that Pospisil provides, I think there's some real chemistry there going forward. I do.
And that's why, like, again, it won't carry over through the summer. I'm a big believer in once the season's over, everything's expired and you have to rebuild it again in the offseason. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes there's exceptions. I'll be interested to see what Kuzmenko shows up in September. And again, to me, he's got to earn that spot back to be on the right side of Nazem Kadri. But it's hard not to immediately kind of pen that one in, or at least pencil that one in for exhibition games, just simply because it was absolutely effective for the Flames down the stretch.
It's Steinberg and Vickers underway this hour on Flames Talk. We are coming at you from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Wet basement? They have a lasting solution to keep your basement dry. If you experience any water in your basement, contact Basement Systems. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystems.com.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Daily Flames Roundtable time on this Tuesday, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly cleaned car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. It's Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. Now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, as we look towards next season, and we... And I think that this question also impacts how the Flames might go about their offseason plans, or at the very least, the way that they think about targeting players in free agency. Gents, would you go into free agency, and or would you go into next season with the idea of Connor Zeri being one of your top three centers?
I probably wouldn't. I wouldn't be dead set against it, simply because this is a retooling team that I don't expect to compete for a Stanley Cup next season. I think best case scenario is they compete and, you know, maybe find a way into the playoffs. But the reason I say probably not is because too small a sample size for me to know whether he is or isn't going to be a top nine centerman moving forward for this team. And I think it's way easier to move a centerman to the wing than it is a winger to center. So for me, the more natural centermen you have in your organization, the better off you're going to be. And if Connor Zeri proves that he can be a top nine, maybe even top six centerman for the Flames, great. Then you move someone else to the wing. If he doesn't, then you've got someone else to play up the middle and do a lot of that heavy lifting. Down the stretch, I thought for the most part, he played really well after being moved from left wing to center. But with that said, I thought he was considerably better against bad teams than against good teams. And that was probably to be expected. Had played almost exclusively on left wing in the first few seasons of his pro career. So there is going to be an adjustment period, and doing heavy lifting against guys like Connor McDavid and Anze Kopitar, easier said than done. They've been around and playing at a really high level for a really long time. So I probably wouldn't change my approach. if I can add a centerman in free agency or add a centerman in the draft to take that pressure off of Connor Zary and allow him to steal someone's job, I think that's best case scenario for me.
Yeah, for me, I wouldn't commit one way or the other in terms of trying to decide right now today on April 23rd whether or not Connor Zary is a center moving forward with the Flames or if he's best left on left wing. Because like you, Willsey, I saw some good things and I saw some things that made me pause over the short duration in which we saw him down the middle. And you know, one thing's for sure is you've got Michael Backlund and Nazem Kadri down the middle, and those are two good pillars to have. But for me, I think the Calgary Flames would be best served trying to find a center in free agency. If there is one, I wouldn't go out of my way with term or dollars if there isn't one that fits what I'm looking for, because you do have players like Connor Zary and you've got Kevin Rooney that can anchor the fourth line and did a really good job. So really, if you need in a pinch, you don't find what you're looking for on the open market, you have the option of going back with Sharon Govich down the middle, which I think we'll probably collectively agree we'd prefer him to be on the wing. You have Connor Zary, you have some options. And at the end of the day, maybe you leave a spot open to see if it's either Zary that can seize a full-time role down the middle or if there's another younger player that potentially is going to play down the middle as well. I just don't lock into anything, and I didn't see enough from that short stint as a center from Connor Zary to automatically declare him one of my top three centers next year.
No, I feel that, guys, but I guess what I would say is that my answer is yes, I would be planning. I would be, I think the right word. I would be hoping that and planning for or having one plan in place for him to be a center. And I would have that as the desirable plan, obviously flexible, but I would be going into next year with the idea that, yeah, we'd like him to be a center and we'd like him to play there. And it would actually back me off a little bit from going out and signing bigger contract for a center iceman. I agree with you, Willsey, when you say it's always good if you can have more of them. But I think it would change my approach a little bit. And definitely, for me, it actually would change my approach to the type of player that I would go be targeting in free agency. As in, I wouldn't necessarily be looking for a bona fide 2-3 guy in free agency. I'd be looking a little bit more depth, and because I'd like to keep that option as open as possible. You know, I think that he performed well. His line was strong offensively. There's obviously going to need to be some work done on the other end, but I do not think it can be overlooked how good he and Jonathan Huberdeau looked together. Guys, it was only 7 games, but that was the best center combo with Huberdeau I've seen in 2 seasons. Although, I grant you, it was a small sample size, but I don't think that that chemistry can be overlooked. And I think it's something that has to be factored into the thinking going into the offseason. So, yeah, like, obviously I'm not penning it in and being rigid and saying it can't move and can't change. And if you have to alter plans, of course, but I would be penciling it in, or at the very least keeping it very much front of mind in terms of how I attack free agency and how I attack training camp. Cause I think that is best case scenario for the organization, because if he can develop into your organization's number 2 center in the next few years, that is a massive, massive step for the team. And I think you have to do everything in your power to see if that can happen. So, yeah, long story short, I would be going into the summertime with that in mind. I would be looking at trying to make that happen. And it would actually kind of somewhat dictate some of my decision-making going into training camp as well.
While I agree that best case scenario is that Connor Zary becomes your number 2 centerman, I don't think that you're in a rush to force that to happen next season. I could see a scenario where he plays some of the season on the wing and some of the season at center. Just continue to develop him. You've got time to do that. So why not do that? And I might be on a little bit different page than you guys when it comes to the whole Sharon Govich-Zary conversation. Because for me, Jonathan Huberdeau wasn't at his best playing with Connor Zary. He had some good games there for sure, but I thought he was better playing with Yegor Sharon Govich. And I have a bigger book on Sharon Govich at center than I do on Zary at center. And for me, while I'm comfortable playing both players at both positions, I'm more comfortable with Sharon Govich as a centerman at this point in time than I am with Zary, simply because he played it for a much longer period of time. Didn't have quite as much success. Wasn't quite as dangerous offensively as he was when he was on right wing, but he was still very productive at playing center and a terrific 200-foot player. The one area Sharon Govich has to focus on is faceoffs. You can't be below 40% and be a good top nine centerman in this league. So that's something he's got to work on, something that Zeri, to a lesser extent, has to work on. So it's good to have options. It's good to have guys that can play at least two, if not all three, four positions. And Flames have quite a few of those guys, including Zeri and Sharon Govich.
Wilsey, you said something that kind of struck a chord with me, and I'm like you, where I would be more comfortable seeing Sharon Govich play center, but I would more like to see Zeri play center, if that makes any sense for you, in terms of finding out what Zeri could be down the middle. Like, if I'm in a Game 7 situation with the Flames roster as it is right now, I probably want Sharon Govich down the middle. But given where this team is at and where it's going to be heading, I think you do need to explore Zeri down the middle more. I'm just not going out on July 1 and locking myself into, okay, Zeri's either going to play left or he's going to play center, and building my roster based on what I think Connor Zeri is going to be.
And guys, I'm on the complete other side of that. I don't think it works with Sharon Govich down the middle. I don't think it's the position for him. I thought he struggled mightily at the position, and there's zero doubt in my mind that he's more effective on either the left or right side.
I agree with you on that, in that sense.
And that's why it's like, I would far prefer Zeri. Like, I think that Zeri's the natural center and Sharon Govich has played center. And that's why I'm like, long term, the natural center, I'd like to see him play down the middle. The guy that they moved to the middle and has barely played it over the last decade, they did it to see if it worked. It's not like he didn't try, like he gave it a noble effort. I just don't think it's it. I think that it was pretty clear in my mind that him down the middle just was they got their doors blown off way too often when that line was out there. And I know it was only 7 games for Zeri, but I also know there's a position he's played in the American League. It's a position he played in junior. I just feel far more comfortable going forward, giving it a try with Zeri than with Sharon Govich, who's, 4 years older as well. So that's why for me, I think that Zeri's a worthwhile experiment. And I think that they tried the experiment and it was worthwhile too with Sharon Govich. I just think you got a pretty definitive answer in my mind. That's all.
See, and I didn't. I absolutely did not. And usually you and I are pretty much on the same page about everything, Pat, but we're on different sides of this argument, because who was he centering for the most part? Sharon Govich.
Sorry, say that one more time.
Who was Sharon Govich centering for the most part? I'll answer my own question. Huberto and Kuzmenko.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but if that line was getting buried, it wasn't getting buried because of him.
And I disagree. His defensive work really struggled for me at that position. Not saying that the wingers weren't part of it. I watched a lot of him down the middle, and I just, the defensive reads and all of it, he's so much more effective for me on the wing. And that's, like, we can agree to disagree, and maybe they give it another try next year, Wilsey. I'm just not in love with that, and I think he's so much more explosive off the wing, whereas I didn't see that much of a difference, granted with a small sample size, from Zeri on the wing to Zeri down the middle.
And in meaningless games and against bad teams. Now, I'm not trying to knock Connor Zeri. I think it's absolutely worth experimenting with, as they did down the stretch, and as I'm sure they will again next season. But it's a 7-game sample size, and not all 7 games were good. So I can't be convinced after 7 games, where maybe 3 or 4 of them were good games, that this is the spot that he belongs in. Just because he's a natural centerman doesn't mean that that's the best position for him either.
Because this is the highest
league in the world. So, if he was great at center and junior, and he played a little bit of center in the AHL, not a ton, we just don't know what he is as a centerman at the professional level. So, yeah, let's see. This is a good team and a good time to do that. But I would also like to have options. And I guess you've got an option in Sharon Govich. Mm-hmm. You've got some other options as far as, guys who were playing wing for you that could potentially play center for you. You're locked in with Kevin Rooney as your number 4 guy, assuming he's healthy. So you need 3. You got one in Michael Backlund, And you got to try to figure out who the other two are going to be, I guess.
Well, Kadri.
Nazem Kadri, yeah. Obviously. Yeah. So yeah. You got to figure out who the other one's going to be, if Kadri's still here, that is.
No, and I just to clarify, I'm by the way, guys, I'm not sold that it was only seven games. Like, I'm as in lockstep with you guys in terms of the small sample size. It's less about whether I am convinced about Zeri being that guy. It's more about just, I think it is a real worthy undertaking because I think he has got more of a potential to be one of the top two centers on this team going forward than really anybody else young on this team does. So that's maybe more where I'm coming from it at, guys, is less about, oh, I'm convinced Zeri. It's only seven games. You're bang on, Willsey. Like, it was, and you're right. I mean, the two games that were the most difficult down the stretch I thought he played well against Edmonton in his first game, but then against LA and Vancouver, yeah, I thought he absolutely struggled on the road against teams with far more forward depth and far better players at forward than teams like Arizona and you know, the other Sharks, Ducks, the also-rans they played down the stretch. So, no, by no means am I convinced that this is the answer. I just think it's a real worthy undertaking to be thinking about going into the offseason. That's more where I'm at.
Well, we definitely agree on that. And I would like to see him play center for at least part of next season. Doesn't mean he has to be a full-time centerman. I guess it really depends what their other options are. And, you know, even if they do start him on the wing. And let's not forget, Connor Zeri was really good playing left wing his rookie season. Yeah. So, you know what? You move him away from there. Is center a more valuable position? Yeah, generally speaking, it is. So if you can turn him into equally as effective a forward playing center as opposed to the wing, I think that's a move that you make 7 days a week. But you could always move him back to the wing, even if you have him at center, because you know he can be a very effective and productive player playing on left wing. So it's good to have a guy who gives you options, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Well, and I mean, and in the end, both Sharangovich and Zeri give you that. Because I do, like, I don't want to sound like I'm running Sharangovich over. It was a tough spot to be thrust into, and I thought he did it as nobly as he could. I didn't feel like it was the best spot for him. Vix, before we head to the fun topic after this one.
I was just going to say, if you're dipping into free agency and to circle it all back, because that's how the question was kind of pertained, I would like to see somebody come in that could be competition for that second line center position, not necessarily locked or written in stone that's going to be your number two, to put Zeri and Sharangovich in the position as well, to use them in the spot organizationally that you think is best, whether it does end up being down the middle or free them up to play a little bit more free offensively on the left side.
Willsey, you want to
just quickly?
Wrap up anything?
Yeah, just really quickly. The good news is they're both at an age, both Diego Sharangovich and Connor Zeri, where if they play them at center, both guys should continue to improve playing at that position. Mm-hmm. Sharangovich doesn't have a ton of experience there. Zeri does, but not at this level. So the more reps they get, the better they should be.
And honestly, guys, the reason I brought that question up, it actually stemmed from the second question. Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek, Aaron, and Pat on this Tuesday. It actually came to my mind when I was writing the second question, which we can spend far less time on, but it is a fun one because I was thinking about a guy who's playing center in Winnipeg and how fun a story it would be if Sean Monahan were to come back to the Flames in the offseason. Thought to myself, do I really, is that the way they, is that the way they should go with the way with Zeri and that potential? Like, should they go and, you know, commit to something like that? Anyway, the reason why it all came into my mind is because I asked this question. Gents, as we're now 3-4 days into the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs, what former member of the Flames are you kind of most attached to here? What former member of the Flames are you hoping most for good things as their teams are in the playoffs?
Should I steal your thunder or should I leave?
No,
Sean
because
for
no,
you?
No, go right ahead. We might be unanimous on it.
I've got a 1A and a 1B. 1B is Chris
Tanev.
I'll go with 1A though, Sean Monahan, because for me he's definitely 1A, not 1B. He spent a long time with this organization. He was an incredibly consistent player, an incredibly consistent goal scorer. I really enjoyed dealing with him, soft-spoken, but always had time for us and, you know, would talk hockey, would talk life. I enjoyed being around Sean Monahan, and I have a ton of respect for him because A lot of people thought he was done. Now, he may have had some surgeries that we don't know about, but by my count, he's had 8 surgeries. And most of them within the last, 5-6 years? And some significant ones. Wrists. You don't want to have bad wrists if you're a goal scorer that shoots the puck like Sean Monahan. Both hips. Back. I mean, this guy is like the bionic man. And he probably should be done, but he's not. And I just think it's such an awesome story. And I think about, you know, all the big goals that Sean Monahan scored for the Flames over the years. I think about the biggest goal that I've called in my 10 seasons doing Flames games. And that was, of course, Johnny Gaudreau's overtime winner in Game 7 against the Stars in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs a couple of years ago. And that moment when Johnny Gaudreau comes off the ice, walks down the tunnel towards the Flames dressing room, and then embraces Sean Monahan, who couldn't play because he was so hurt. For me, that was one of my favorite moments in 10 seasons being around this Calgary Flames team. And for him to, you know, fight through all of that adversity, to battle back from all the surgeries and the injuries, and then to find his game again, and to start playing at a high level again, and to get through a season healthy for the first time in forever, and to be a player who a team wanted, who thought could put them over the hump as they work their way towards the Stanley Cup playoffs. I think the Sean Monahan story is one you could write a book about. So he's the guy for me.
I'll go with your 1B, Willsey, because I thought that Sean Monahan would be a very popular topic amongst this roundtable. So I'm going to go Chris Tanev, just because of the warrior that he is. Finished 3rd in the NHL in block shots, split between Calgary and, of course, the Dallas Stars. And I just think back to a couple seasons ago, a couple playoffs ago, in that series against the Dallas Stars, against the Edmonton Oilers, when he got hurt and came back, and what was it, a separated shoulder or a torn labrum or whatever it was that he was battling through, and still came back to be Calgary's most effective defenseman, in my mind, against the Edmonton Oilers in that series. And just, you can hear the impact that Chris Tanev has had on the Calgary Flames and will continue to have, just through the things that Mackenzie Weegar says about him, and how, yeah, he was one of the leaders on the ice, but he was also sort of a quiet presence that you just watch, and you couldn't but help raise your compete level when you'd watch Chris Tanev block a shot with his shin pad, with his arm, with his head, with his face, whatever it was. And I think he is exactly what the Dallas Stars needed in terms of putting together a lengthy run in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll see if that comes to fruition, but just knowing the warrior that Chris Tanev is, it's hard for me not to get behind him and pull for him with the Dallas Stars, just knowing the interactions I've had with him, how he carries himself, and the lasting effect he's had on teammates.
No no Johnny Gaudreau consideration? Nobody's
he said playoffs.
I didn't know,
right?
He was an option.
Oh, he's...
Derek Ryan?
Maybe not the greatest choice.
I like Johnny Gaudreau.
I do. I do too. I just was making fun of his choice to go to Columbus. That's all. Just I like the cheap pop, like Mick Foley when he
Slow
went to...
Low-hanging fruit. Pat.
Oh, absolutely. Like when Mick Foley used to go around and be like, so glad to be here in Calgary, Alberta. And then, woo! Like that, I was just trying
to get
our
city name.
The low-hanging fruit. Or like when Luke Bryan was wearing a Flames jersey. He's a Flames fan! Yeah!
And then would wear an Oilers jersey the next
Canucks
night. Jersey.
Who's Luke Bryan?
Whoa, flag on the play.
No, it's, if you're not a country, if you're not a country.
I'm not Western, a country guy.
If you're not a country Western guy, you don't, no flag on not knowing who Luke Bryan is. Don't feel bad about
multi-platinum
that.
Multi-platinum recording artist.
Yeah, I gotta go. Like, you know, the Florida story is interesting. More, I'm Tkachuk and Bennett. I'm curious to see what they
Ryan
do.
Ryan Lomberg.
I love Ryan Lomberg. One of my absolute favorites.
He's
of
a
all
beauty.
Time. But it's gotta be Monahan. I mean, just the emotional. The emotional connection that Flames fans have with Monahan is really neat. And, you know, just, I even remember how, remember when the Flames beat Winnipeg, but they had to come from behind because Monahan scored a natural hat trick in the first period. You're like, what the hell are we watching? Like, people were so happy for him online. Flames fans were loving it. The people in the building
were
like,
cheering.
Exactly. You're like, how can you not? And I just, the emotional connection that Flames fans have with Monahan, it's hard not to have him. And Tanev is great. Like, what an absolute warrior is the right word. He's a perfect 1B. And, you know, Toffoli and Tkachuk and Bennett and Lomberg and a few, Zadorov, maybe not, Lindholm. Like, there's some other guys out there, no doubt about it. I haven't even mentioned Hannafin in Vegas, but for me, it's Monahan hands down, just because of what he meant to so many for this organization.
The other thing that puts him at 1A for me is that I don't know if he wanted to leave Calgary.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the other guys we talked about made the choice to leave here. He didn't. He got traded.
Yep. So, with a first round pick, I might add.
Yeah. And in hindsight, I mean, who knew he was going to get healthy and become the player that he used to be again? I certainly wouldn't have bet on it. So I understand where the Flames made that move to open up the cap space to bring in Nazem Kadri. But, you know, Sean Monahan, it's just such a great story for me. And a guy who, again, scored so many big goals and was a part of so many big moments and just an easy guy to cheer for. So I'm so happy to see him healthy again. I'm so happy to see him producing and scoring goals again. And, you know, it wouldn't be hard to cheer for the Jets, because another small market Canadian team that would love to win their first Stanley Cup, you know what it would mean to that franchise and to that fan base. So it's hard for me to root for a team other than the Flames these days. But if I had to pick one, it would be the Jets. I love their head coach, Rick Bowness.
Yep.
Obviously, Sean Monahan, Tyler Toffoli, Josh Morrissey, a Calgary kid. So
Adam Lowry, a Calgary kid.
Yeah, I'm kind of
four goals combined in game one
for them.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that beating the Avalanche 7-6 is going to be a recipe for success, but yeah. So for sure, those are my two top guys, and then of course there's Nikita Zadorov. It's really too bad that he probably won't win a Stanley Cup this year, because I think that that'd be something. I think that's something that the Red Mile. We might have to fire up if the Canucks and Zadorov win a Stanley Cup.
Oh, I see what you did there.
I see the the sarcasm is dripping.
Broke the meter.
I can't even see you, and I can see the sarcasm. That was fun. And I feel like of all the Canadian teams still going, Flames fans don't want Vancouver.
Nope.
Flames fans don't want Edmonton.
Nope.
Nobody wants Toronto.
Nope.
But, like, Winnipeg's hard to cheer against. As you mentioned, Wilsey, Rick Bowness is likable. You've got the Monahan factor. You've got the Morrissey-Lowry factor. You know, there's just a bunch of likable guys on that team. It's a plucky, small-market Canadian team. Yeah, I think Winnipeg's the one for me that I'm even like, yeah, it's hard to root against them. So I'm with you on that front, too.
Well, the Maple Leafs, for me, I don't dislike them as much as everybody else around here seems to. I like their general manager. I like Mark Giordano and TJ Brody. Wouldn't it be great to see Gio win a Stanley Cup? I don't think it's going to happen, but come on. Like, that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of with you. I don't despise.
Is that the silver lining
Leafs.
If Toronto wins?
But yeah, it would be this.
Absolutely.
And Boston kind of.
And my dad. My dad's been a Leafs fan his whole life. I'd love to see them win one for him. All I'm not saying I'm cheering for them, but I wouldn't be upset.
Okay.
I'd be happy for him.
Fair enough. I can get behind that. All right, we'll do something else fun on Wednesday. I have no idea what, but we'll come up with something for Wednesday's roundtable, and we'll talk then. Thank you, Wilsey.
Okay, guys.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That's your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at mercedesbenzcountryhills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.